And now on AM 1230 WBZT, Supernatural Crossroads, Real Paranormal Talk. Under the leadership of the Florida Ghost Team, you are about to venture into the realm of hauntings, UFOs, near-death experiences, the occult, all things paranormal. In the next hour, find the truth behind these myths, legends, and realities. Share your experiences. Just call in to 561-844-6167. That's 844-6167. Now it's time for the most interesting and unusual hour of talk radio in South Florida. Florida Ghost Team welcomes you to Supernatural Crossroads, Real Paranormal Talk.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Supernatural Crossroads, Real Paranormal Talk Radio. My name is Chuck Oren. I am the Assistant Director of Florida Ghost Team, and my regular co-host, Darlene, cannot make it tonight. My producer, Sean, cannot make it tonight. So I've reached out, and I've gone ahead and been able to snag Michelle, our district manager down here, to jump in and lend a hand. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to see you here. Tonight we're going to be talking about reincarnation. We've got a very interesting guest tonight, Stephen Sakellarios. He's studied reincarnation in conjunction with Eastern philosophy and comparative religion since his late teens. He began studying the Western research in earnest about 3 years ago for the documentary and website titled In Another Life. He has a master's degree in counseling in human systems from FSU, so he's a Florida graduate. Glad to see him back with us. During which time, he studied the hospice movement and taught a free class on death and dying. He served on the board of an organization which started the first hospice in Tallahassee, and he is with us tonight to talk about reincarnation. Steve, welcome to Supernatural Crossroads.
Thanks for inviting me.
No, we're glad to have you here. So, in talking about, in reading your bio, you've got some information there about Eastern philosophy and Western philosophy. What's the basic difference in those types of philosophies when we're talking about reincarnation?
Well, when you get into the more esoteric philosophers, there really isn't a difference, because in the West you have Plato and a string of people that came after Plato. I don't know a lot about Western philosophy, but when you get into philosophical dualism, you have people who believe that the mind and the body are two different things. And there, the East and West are very similar. But when you get into the materialistic end of Western philosophy, then you diverge quite a bit. And the basic difference, as I see it, is that in the West, we believe that we're a physical being, and then we have spiritual experiences. But in the East, they're pretty much accustomed to think of a man as a spiritual being having a physical experience. So it's a flip-flop, it's like a figure-ground switch.
Okay, and which side do you prefer? Which side do you take in this?
Well, clearly I believe that we're a spiritual being having a physical experience.
Okay, and now in reincarnation, we're talking about, things like past life regression, through hypnosis, things like that. Are you a staunch believer in that?
Yeah, I didn't know. Actually, I've been studying the Western side for about 13 years, since I started work on my documentary, which was around 1997, 98. And that's when I first encountered past life therapy and realized that it was such a thing. I had no idea, never heard of any of this stuff before then. I didn't know that any research was being done on reincarnation at that time. So it was all new to me. One of the people that's introduced it, one of the pioneers, was Brian Weiss, psychiatrist Dr. Brian Weiss, who was Floridian. I think he was in charge of a psychiatric unit at Mount Sinai Hospital down in Miami.
Okay.
So he's one of the people that's pioneered this whole business and popularized it.
Okay. Now, you tend to believe in man being a spiritual being with the physicality attached afterwards and that type of thing. How does it work exactly? Because I'm a little fuzzy on this. This is not my area of expertise, obviously, but I'm very curious about if we have a population that continues to grow on and on and on, how do people get reincarnated, but we still have more and more people all the time?
Well, I can go into this in as much depth as we don't want to go into too much depth, but there's an astral realm, or what's called a subtle realm, which is a dimension of energy, and then there's the physical realm, which is like crystallized out of that energy. So one yogi that I saw at a retreat, Baba Hari Das, explained it as like the subtle realm, the energy realm, is like a balloon in proportion. And the physical world is like a little basket hanging under the balloon. So the energy realm is much vaster, and there's many, many more souls in that energy realm than there are on the Earth at any given time. And the Earth goes through phases. In the East, they talk about yugas or ages, and there's four ages, and it's cyclical. So there's the lowest age that we're just now coming out of, and then you go into the second highest, the third highest, the fourth highest, then it goes back down again, and it's constantly going up and down. So the Earth has seen advanced civilizations before, and not only that, this process is so long and so vast and so old that there's been other planets, as I understand, that have stood in as Earths before. So even the Earth is kind of replaceable, you know, in the role that it has. So this has been going on a long, long time, and there's a vast number of souls in the energy realm compared to here. So at any given point on the Earth, there may be a lot or there may be a few.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting.
So it's a much larger picture, in other words, than most people.
So every soul that has ever existed is not necessarily here, then?
Exactly.
Okay. Now, as it relates to paranormal investigations, the things that we do as a paranormal investigation team and that type of thing, the reincarnation aspects of that, are these souls, the things that we deal with, the things that we're looking for, are those the same thing that gets reincarnated in somebody?
Well, sometimes. As I'm sure you're aware, there's basically two kinds of ghost phenomena, and one of them is when there's like a recording left over in the ether.
A residual, yeah.
Yeah, so that's not an entity, that's like a memory almost, that's, you know, embedded in that area. And then you have actual entities, and some of those entities are earthbound for some reason or other. They didn't go over to the other side as they normally would. They got stuck in the level that's just right above the physical plane. For some reason or other, suicides a lot of times can get stuck like that. And those people, you're more likely to have encounters with those people, because normally people don't stay in this realm that's right near the Earth, physical Earth plane. But it can be entered into. It's like, I've heard it called an antechamber. So it's like a space that's in between the physical world and the astral world, and that's like right next to our Earth plane. It looks very much like our Earth. As a matter of fact, as I understand, it's just the objects are a much finer matter, but it's basically like a replica of the Earth. And people from higher realms can come down into that antechamber temporarily when they want to, like, talk to a medium or something like that, but they don't normally hang out there. But then there's people that are stuck there, so you've got a couple different types of people that could come into that realm where you would bump into them in your research.
I see.
So the people that are stuck, they're not reincarnating because they're stuck, and they could be stuck there for hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. They may not know they're dead, as you probably know.
Right.
But the people that are reincarnating, they might come down temporarily in there to communicate, and then that they wouldn't normally stay there.
I see. You have this documentary, In Another Life. I have not had the opportunity to see it. I wanted to see it before this week, and I apologize for not viewing it ahead of time. But what exactly is that about? Is that specifically about reincarnation, or?
It is, and my basic premise, first off, my premise for the thing is that reincarnation is a phenomenon. Almost all the documentaries that you'll see on the subject are arguing the point, is it real or is it not real? And I'm like, past that already. You know? I'm like, it's real already. So the basic theme, the basic question that I'm asking in the documentary is, okay, given that it's real, how are people in America in particular encountering this thing in a society that swears it doesn't exist? So that's my theme, and I go through four or five or six different basic common ways that people encounter it.
Okay, and what are some of those ways?
Well, the first way is people have dreams, past life dreams, and they're usually vivid. They usually start early in life, like from childhood. They're vivid. They're not confusing. They remember them, and they can occasionally be checked out historically, so, which is interesting. And then there's people that have flashbacks where they're just kind of going along and suddenly they hit a place or a situation or something that triggers a memory, and it comes up and it's like a movie running, you know, like a whole immersion experience. That's a little more rare, but it does happen.
Okay.
There's people that go to past life therapy. There's people that have gone into therapy, like Brian Weiss's client when he figured out that this was real. He had a client that he hypnotized for just normal psychiatric purposes, and he said, go to the source of the problem. You know, and this happens, the person hypnotizing them will say, go to the first time this happened, and suddenly they're in the 1700s. You know, nobody, neither the therapist nor the client believed in reincarnation. They just said, go to when it first happened, you know. So that's another way people are encountering it. Then of course, there's seminars and, you know, workshops and things like that. And there's also the Eastern philosophy, the Eastern teachers that have brought the idea over. So those are some of the ways. One of the big ways that people encounter this is their children talking about a past life to them. And writer and Carol Bowman has looked into this strongly. And it turns out that it's apparently fairly common. It's just that parents don't pay any attention, so nobody knows that all our children are talking at some point or other about a past life, and nobody pays any attention.
Okay. Very interesting stuff. With the past life regression and things like that, you say this past life or regression therapy, that type of thing. How does one get involved in that? Is it something that's recommended by, again, we are talking about what a lot of people consider fringe science. So is it something that a psychologist, a run-of-the-mill everyday psychologist, will recommend from time to time?
Well, there are psychologists that are interested in it. There are psychologists that are practicing it, and a lot of them are in the closet. I was actually on a radio show where the psychologist that I was on the show with came out for the first time ever publicly, you know. So, I mean, there's people that are availing themselves of it, and there's people that are practicing it, but they don't make it known because they're concerned about their careers. But there's an organization called IARRT.org. I believe it is, which is one of the professional organizations. You can go there and you can get a recommendation for somebody in your area. But to answer your question, usually what happens is somebody's tried everything and nothing works. And
okay.
Finally, they try past life therapy, and especially if it's something like a phobia, it can be cured for life in a couple, three sessions. So it's pretty strong in terms of just its effects.
Okay, Steve, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
As a teenager, I had past life regression hypnosis,
mm-hmm.
and I was taken back, and I described myself as a younger girl, and they, you know, I described the house I lived in, which wasn't anything current day, and they progressed me year by year, and as I got older, I seemed to get more hesitant, so it was their feeling that possibly I might have passed away at an early age.
Mm-hmm.
And I seem to have, or when I was younger, I had a phobia of walking down the street with, like, a vehicle coming up behind me.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if perhaps something may have happened concerning something like that, but how often in a reincarnation or a regression-type experience do you actually portray these phobias in your current life as to things that may have happened to you in the past?
Well, it's post-traumatic stress syndrome. That's all it is. It's just that it's post-traumatic stress syndrome. Normally we think of that as like a soldier comes back from the war and he hears a loud noise and he, you know, freaks out and, you know, he's looking, kind of wakes up in the middle of the night with cold sweats and is looking around for the enemy, you know, that kind of thing. But
right.
It's the exact same thing, except the memory's carried over. That's all. So they treat it basically the same way. You have to go back and you have to relive it, and then the therapist says, now that was then and this is now.
Right.
You know, and then you're free of it. The thing about therapy is that validation is everything. So until the feeling makes perfect sense in the context of what happened to you. It doesn't make any sense in this life, you know. So it seems like you're crazy because you're afraid of getting in the bathtub because you're going to drown.
You right.
know? It makes no sense. You've got these tremendously powerful feelings like you're drowning and yet you're in the bathtub. So that sounds crazy. But when you go re-experience the thing in the past life where you actually, you know, fell off a ship and drowned, then it makes perfect sense. Then you're validated. Okay, I'm not crazy. That was perfectly reasonable for that time, but it was then, and this is now. Once you're emotionally validated, you can let go.
Now, people experiencing phobias such as this, can that resolve itself without them actually going and getting therapy?
I don't know. I mean, there's lots of therapy for phobias, and some of it's successful to a point, and some of it isn't. I think it might be possible to bury those memories, you know?
Right.
For long, you know, it might not be a real cure, but it might be a fix for however long.
Well, I know as I got older, you know, I didn't feel the same. It was basically my early teen years,
mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, 9, 10, 2, somewhere, you know, somewhere in the, you know, young, older child, you know, teen years. And then all of a sudden, you know, I didn't really have that feeling any longer.
Now, there is a tendency for memories, past life memories, to come up when you're about the same age as whatever it is that happened.
Okay.
So that's probably what happened in your case. That must have been around the age that it happened.
Right.
Past that age, it diminished.
Right. They were saying, you know, when I was under hypnosis, by the time I, like, hit 12, 13, 14, I just, as each year progressed on, I got more and more hesitant to the point they finally said, okay, enough is enough, and, you know, they brought me out of it.
Well, you got two clues now that that's probably about the time that life ended.
Okay. Very interesting.
One of our previous guests a few weeks back wrote a book, and I've been reading that book, and he speaks about reincarnation in terms of karma, mm-hmm. and you know, the whole cycle of going through, and he claims that it's his belief that a soul can actually choose the life that they reincarnate into in order to improve the karma and all that. How do you feel about that?
Well, my personal feeling about it is that it's probably a lot like college. That when you go in your freshman year, you don't have a lot of electives. But by the time you get to your senior year, you have a lot of elective choices. So I'm guessing it's that way.
Okay. So it is a spiritual journey, then.
Yeah, I think that at the beginning, when you don't have a lot of lifetimes under your belt, I mean, we're talking a lot of lifetimes, but in general, I think you have less choices when you're a little bit less developed.
Now, is there a theory that the people that you have in your life now are the people that you had in your life, you know, your past lives as well as any future lives you may have?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it's possible to get close to anybody unless you've racked up X amount of hours with them in past lives. I mean, the closeness that you feel with people is a direct result of time logged, you know? And I think that absolutely that things constantly cycle. We're looking at things in cycles now. Reincarnation is looking at things in cycles, and things and people keep coming around again. And basically, you can even think of it as like a looping movie. I mean, I do video editing as part of my work, and I think of it as like an edited video. It's the same video, but now a little something's been edited in it this time. But basically, the same characters are coming up, the same situations, the same themes. So when you start looking at past lives and exploring them, you'll start to see themes pop up, themes and counter themes, and that's when it starts getting real, when you start seeing those themes.
Okay.
And people.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for that. Steve, stay with us for a minute. We have to take our first break, pay some bills here, okay. And we will be right back. We're talking with Stephen Sakellarios about reincarnation tonight.
Welcome back to Supernatural Crossroads, Real Paranormal Talk, with the Florida Ghost Team. To share your thoughts or experiences with the hosts, call 561-844-6167 or toll free from almost anywhere, 1-800-889-0267. Now, back to more Real Paranormal Talk with Supernatural Crossroads.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We are talking with Stephen Sakellarios about reincarnation. Again, those call-in lines in the greater West Palm Beach area, 561-844-6167. Out of the area, you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-889-0267. Stephen, Michelle brought up an interesting point, and just for clarification's sake, I have a follow-up question from a Brett up in Jacksonville. He texted in, and he wants to know the feeling that when you meet somebody, you've known them all your life, is that tied in directly to reincarnation, or is that just something, you know, is that just a quirk of fate type thing?
No, it's tied directly in. Not to give too short an answer, but absolutely, that's the way that you get that feeling, because you really have known that person all of your life. It just wasn't this life.
Or all several lives.
Yeah, several. Yeah, or probably several.
Okay. We have a caller, Adele in Michigan. Adele, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi. What's your question, dear?
Well, I wanted to know what would be a sign, or what could we look for, or how could we tell to know if we were, like, living as a reincarnation?
Okay, you want me to answer that?
Yes, Steve,
yeah.
Please. Mm-hmm.
The question was, how can we know if we've had a reincarnation or if we're living? Well, first off, everybody reincarnates and a lot of times. This is a long, long process. So the answer for everybody is yes. But how you can know that, it's a good question. Like I said, some people have repeating dreams. But here's the thing. If you ever say, like, I've always liked it cold, or I've always hated shellfish, or I've always felt uncomfortable with short people, or anything I've always, that's one really good sign right there, that's an influence from a past life. Another one is
it,
I'm sorry?
Is it anything like deja vu?
Very much so, yeah. Same. That's another one. And also, children usually go through phases. I mean, everybody knows that suddenly he's going through a cowboy phase. Or like when I was a little kid, suddenly I got into a phase of making little tiny miniature house with landscaping and little trees, and I was totally into it, and I completely forgot about it, you know. I talked to one lady who went through a phase when she was a kid of tracking, like in the snow, you know. Suddenly she was totally into tracking, and then she forgot about it. Those are signs of a past life. Past lives tend to come back as little phases in childhood, and then you outgrow them. So there's a bunch of ways, but those are some of the ways.
Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Adele, for calling in. You talk about these phases and things like that. When we see this type of thing on television and stuff, and I realize the media is not necessarily real life, but everybody who you see on TV who's going through a past life regression, they've always been a high-ranking soldier or royalty or nobility or something like that, and you never see Skippy the dim-witted stable buyer or anything like that come through. I mean, you know, why is that? Is it just because it's television and they're doing it that way? Or?
Well, I haven't watched too many on television, but if you read the literature, you'll find that most people remember very ordinary lives. I mean, the thing is that I think that I'm guessing now, I don't know this for sure, but my impression is that it takes several lifetimes to build up energy in some direction of excellence. It could be philanthropy, it could be business, it could be artistic, you know, like a musician, a guitarist, or a pianist or something. Whatever it is, it takes a bunch of lifetimes to gradually build up that karmic power. And when that is built up after several lifetimes of effort, it manifests in one lifetime, and that probably achieves some degree of fame. You know, in other words, you've built up this potential energy over several lifetimes, and then when it manifests, you manifest in such a way that you get recognized, probably. So everybody probably gets at least one famous life sooner or later. See? And there's a lot, when you think about it, there's a lot of ways to be famous.
Sure.
Let's say you could be a famous writer, a famous musician, a famous actor, a famous politician. And basically, and this kind of goes to that idea of 6 degrees of separation.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's pretty, you know, basically everybody's not that far away from somebody famous. You know, yeah, my grandmother knew such as, you know, Clark Gable. Or, you know, you talk to, and somewhere in the family, somebody knew somebody that was famous. You know what I'm saying? It's not that unusual to be famous. And so I think everybody, it's like the Andy Warhol's 15 minutes of fame, I think he talked about.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what he was talking about, actually. But, you know, it's not that unusual to be famous in some way. All it takes is to build up karmic power in some direction over 4 or 5, 6 lifetimes and then manifest. So anybody will probably have 1 or 2
okay.
lifetimes where they'd achieved something that was notable. See, it's not that unusual. So we think it's unusual. It really isn't. It's probably normal for everybody to have 1 or 2 famous past lives in some way.
Okay.
Most of them are not. Most of them are obscure.
Okay. We have another caller on the line. Sean is on the line. Sean, how are you?
Hey, how you doing, Chuck?
Good.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, Michelle.
So, what's going on, Sean?
I really have a question because it's something that I've been through where I'm talking to a person and it seems like everything that's coming out of my mouth, I've said before, it's a strange feeling. Is that something like deja vu? Because it's like I know what I'm going to say before I say it.
Okay, this gets into deeper stuff than we can probably really get into here, but my understanding of that is you probably dreamt it before. So you probably had precognitive dream about the thing, and so when you're doing it, it rings a bell, you know, because you've already lived through it. And that goes into a whole theory of mental impressions and karma and how basically our reality manifests out of our unconscious like a projector shows the movie on a screen. So what's basically happening in that case is that you've already seen the movie. got projected, you've already seen the movie, and now it looks familiar.
Even though I know, I mean, it's like, okay, if I'm standing talking to you, everything that's coming out of my mouth is, it's like I've said it before, and I already know what the response is.
Yeah, I've had that experience once or twice. It's very spooky. But what's happened is that your subconscious mind, you dreamt the thing before it manifested fully in the physical world, and now it's manifesting. Now, in other words, you saw it on the reel before it got projected into the movie house. And now it's getting projected out in the movie house, which is our physical world. And, I already saw that. Well, you already did see it before it got projected. That's my best understanding of that. But I've experienced it, too, once or twice.
Thanks for joining us.
It's just a weird feeling. And I've always wanted to know the answer to that. And I thank you for giving me some clarification on that. And thank you for being on the show.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Right, thank you.
Thanks, Sean. Have a good night.
Sean.
Have you ever gone through a regression?
I have.
Okay, and what things have you discovered about yourself through your regression?
Well, first off, I'll mention the context, and it was during the course of filming. And somebody that I wanted to film was Dr. Roger Wilger, and he does a type of regression that's the Netherton method, which is not hypnotic. It's based on association, basically, like Gestalt therapy. And the way that works is, for example, somebody will come in to the therapist and they'll say, I've got this pain in my stomach, this awful, pain. And he said, well, be your stomach. And he said, what do you mean, be my stomach? He said, be your stomach. So the guy says, okay, I'm my stomach, and I have this stabbing pain. And he says, really be your stomach. Tell me what it feels like. And so he says, I'm my stomach, and I have a stabbing pain. And suddenly they flip into a past life. And they're saying, I'm being stabbed, I'm being stabbed in the stomach, right? So that's this association. So anyway, the condition of filming was that I had to go through a week workshop in order to film him, and then I'd be able to film, allowed to interview him and film a session at the end, and it's in the documentary. So I said, throw me in that briar patch, I'm ready, great. So I got there, and just a regular guy, he wanted everybody to call him Roger. He didn't want to be called Dr. Wilger. But when he asked for a volunteer, I shot up my hand quick. I said, me, So I got to be the first volunteer. So I experienced just glimpses. I don't, go into it full immersion like some people do, like I'm walking around in it. Some people actually have that experience of, they're in the movie, they're experiencing it. I just get glimpses. But I got glimpses of about four or five lifetimes, and I was talking about themes. They were all connected, and the first one was it was a school for classical music in India, and I had gotten accepted into the school, and I was totally enthusiastic about it. I was so totally into it and enthusiastic that I was making everybody else nervous because they were cheating and I wasn't. They were kind of not taking it real seriously, and I was totally serious, so I was making them look bad. So basically, they figured out a way to kick me out. And in this school, you didn't even get to put your hands on an instrument until you went through this kind of boot camp sort of thing, this austerity training. So I never made it through this boot camp, and I got kicked out, and it was political. It was basically I was kicked out because they didn't like me because I was making them look bad. So then I became a hermit on the side of a mountain, and I was bitter against society that whole lifetime. And I had this awful death by uremic poisoning from some kind of blockage. And the only person that ever was my friend was some little boy would come up from the village and, bring me food or something, So this was not like a famous lifetime where it was an awful death and, it was miserable. But it made a lot of sense about my personality that I felt kind of separated from society and resentful about society. And I still had this tremendous pull towards Indian classical music. And it made a lot of sense in terms of things I've always felt. I was talking about, I've always felt this way. Well, I've always loved Indian classical music, and I've always had trouble with fitting in society, made a whole lot of sense. And then there were several interconnected, lifetimes that went back and forth that I saw.
Okay. Now, I went through some phases myself going through. I've never had a regression or anything like that. How much, just as an example, I went through a phase in my late teens, early 20s, where I was completely enamored with everything Japanese, especially feudal Japan, samurais, all that kind of stuff. Now, how much, if I decide to go through a regression, how do we differentiate whether or not that's just something that I was fascinated about, and it's imprinting on the regression, or it's actually a real regression, and there was some Japanese time in my previous lives.
Well, there's proof, and there's certain criteria for proof. So that's a separate subject that I think it'd be interesting to get into in a minute. Is, you know, how do you prove this thing? And there are ways to prove it. But the other answer to your question is, I personally believe that it is impossible to get seriously interested in anything unless you've got past lives involved. You just can't get enough interest in it. You know, you could force yourself, you know, and you kind of, you know, with it for 2 or 3, 4 days, especially if somebody was paying you, and then you get bored with it and you drop it, and you know, before you know it, you're into something else. The kind of interest where somebody gets totally focused on something and they devote their life to it, or they're totally into it, that can only come from past life experience. That's my feeling.
That's really fascinating. I never looked at it that way, that likes that you have throughout your lifetime could possibly be related to something that you've lived in the past.
Yeah, the only way, as far as I know, unless somebody's paying you. You know, otherwise, you can't get that motivation. And the same with people.
Okay. Now, are there ever any brand new souls that come out, or are all of these old souls are just trying to experience different things through different sets of eyes?
According to the Eastern teachings that I've read, there's a whole process of evolution where the soul comes up through all of the different mineral, vegetable, and animal kingdoms, and eventually ends up reincarnating as a human being. And once you start reincarnating as a human being, you don't go back to animals. So if you're talking about human beings, a new soul would be somebody that had most recently been a gorilla, for example, or a chimpanzee or something. But I think that's pretty rare. I mean, I don't think that's all that common. Most people have had hundreds of thousands of lifetimes, you know, way more than even in the New Age movement you find. People in the New Age movement, you say, oh, I've had 30 lifetimes. You know, well, according to my studies, we've had, you know, 30,000 or 300,000 or whatever, so...
Okay.
Numbers, yeah.
On the other side of it, how long can you reincarnate? Is there ever a point where you're considered what they call an old soul, and you no longer reincarnate?
I think at the point where you start questioning these things, you could pretty much assume you're an old soul.
Okay.
Relatively speaking. But in terms of the end of it, then of course you have to leave the Western research and you have to go to the Eastern teachings, and then they talk about, you know, the trip back to God. In other words, we've all started with God unconscious, and then there's this whole trip through evolution to reincarnation as a human being for hundreds of thousands or however many lifetimes, and then eventually there's the trip back to God, which is in consciousness.
Okay.
I've got a question, just got texted in.
Yeah.
This person wants to know, they have a habit, whenever they pick up a magazine, they read it from back to front as opposed to front to back. Does that possibly indicate that maybe they grew up in a foreign land?
Sounds Judaic to me. Is there any other culture that reads from back to front other than Hebrew? I don't know for sure, but it certainly sounds like it.
I think the Japanese read right to left. I'm not sure back to front, though.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know either. But anyway, that's very interesting. It sounds like it certainly could be a past life influence. Anything that you've always done, like I said, generally speaking, is probably, you know, I know it sounds weird for me. You know, you go to the chiropractor and he gives you a free exam, and whatever problems you have, always, it's a chiropractic problem. You know, so by the same token, when you talk to a reincarnationist, everything is reincarnation, right? But I really believe this, that you can't, you know, when you talk about something that's inexplicably you've always been drawn to or always have felt or always have wanted to do, that's a pretty clear sign that a past life is involved, I feel.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and we're going to have to take another break here. Steve, stay with us, please. We are speaking with Stephen Sakellarios. We're talking about reincarnation. We do have a caller waiting on live, also named Steve. Don't go away. We'll get to you as soon as we get back. And we are back. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking with Stephen Sakellarios. We are, and Steve, I hope I'm getting your name correct.
Perfect. Yeah.
Outstanding. We're talking about reincarnation. We do have a caller on the line, Steve in Ocala. Steve, are you there? Hello, Steve.
Hello?
Hello, Stephen Ocala. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I would like to know, does everybody get reincarnated or just select few?
Everybody. Everybody gets reincarnated.
Okay.
No exceptions.
Okay.
Okay, now does when since everybody gets reincarnated, does everybody, absolutely everybody, have experiences in their current life that tie into their previous lives?
I think, depending on how you define experiences, I think they do. I think that everything you feel drawn to, you know, strongly drawn to, every person you feel strongly drawn to, the way that you react to things is based on the way that you have reacted to things, but you're not consciously aware of it. You don't realize where it's coming from. Anytime that you have strong emotional juice, you know, about something, and there's no real reason in this life to have that strong, you know, juice attached to it, it's probably coming from a past life. So in a sense, everybody's experiencing these things. It's also experienced as intuition. Intuition is kind of digested, condensed past life experience. So, for example, if you're out with a bunch of guys and they're all drinking and somebody says, let's go race, you know, and you say, no, I don't think I want to, you know. Everybody else goes out and gets killed, and you don't because I don't think I want to do that, you know. I mean, it's probably a past life experience. You probably had that experience before, and you said, well, no, I guess I don't want to do that again. So that's intuition, you know, and that's, you don't remember it, but that learning from the past life is condensed into intuition.
Okay. I have to ask this question because it's really nagging on my mind ever since we started this discussion. What's the reason for all this? Why do we just go through life after life after life? What's the end result? What's the ultimate goal?
Well, the ultimate goal is to realize who you really are. And who you really are is the soul. And the soul is compared with if God is an ocean, then the soul is like a drop in that ocean, or lifted out of that ocean. And so you start out from God, the soul gets kind of seemingly separated from God, and goes through this period of developing consciousness. So the whole of evolution is to develop consciousness. And as you're developing consciousness, you're also gaining impressions, you know, of your experience that gives you identity. And when you reach the human form, now you've got full consciousness, but your consciousness is hemmed in and filtered by all these impressions, all these experiences. And so you reincarnate to try to relive and straighten out all of these impressions. And what happens is the more you reincarnate, the more impressions you get. So it gets more and more and more complicated. But basically you're trying to find your own real self. So the point of it eventually is to get to the point where you experience yourself without any of these impressions intervening. And that takes a long, long, long time. First off, you have to get to the point where you want to find the truth about yourself. And at that point, you're what we talked about, an old soul, where you're starting to question, and you're starting to figure, what am I doing here? What is this all about? That's a sign of an older soul that's getting ready to take the journey back, you know. And who am I really, you know? What's going on here? That kind of thing.
Speaking about who am I really and all that, what about these people who are, they're just really heinous people? I mean, you know, the Adolf Hitlers, the Timothy McVeighs, you know, these kind of people. What's their purpose to come forward and do these types of things? I mean, are they ultimately trying to find out that there are ultimate evil people or evil souls out there as well as good souls?
No, nothing of the sort. What's happened, first off, is that we've all been animals. So everything is appropriate in its place. When the tiger slaughters the deer, you don't think that that's a particularly evil tiger. It's just a tiger. It's what they do. You know, the sharks and whatever, that's just what they do. But we have all that in us. So what happens in human beings, I think, is that we have all that in us, and if we're kind of aware of it, you know, in other words, if we're in touch with our shadow, in Jungian terms, our dark side, you know, the dark side, if we're in touch with that and we can kind of work with it and say, well, I know I've got that in me too, you can work with it, it doesn't take over. If you pursue a certain area in life where you get really, really good, you know, I take care of people, I give to people, I'm super good, I'm really, really good. You just believe that your identity is that you're a super, super good person. You lose touch with your shadow. You know, that's not part of me anymore. That's not me. That can't be me. You know, I'm super good, right? I'm the choir boy. I'm whatever, you know. So if you keep on going like that, lifetime after lifetime, this is my supposition now. I don't know this for sure, but this is what I put together in my own mind. If you keep on going like that, at some point the shadow just jumps out and takes over. You know, the thing just comes out and just wipes all that, and suddenly you're like the reverse because you've kept the thing back for so long, you know. you know, the blow, suddenly all the sitting on that you wouldn't admit was any part of you at all suddenly takes over. Somebody like Hitler actually over many, many lifetimes was probably too good.
Okay. Steve, I got to remind you, we are on AM radio.
Oh, I'm, yeah.
Okay.
All the stuff that was down there.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, pardon me. I was afraid that was going to happen. So all that stuff that was down there got suppressed, basically, because it was no longer part of that person's identity. They couldn't relate to it at all. And then they got to a certain point where somehow, at some point it takes over, and suddenly they're absolutely the reverse.
Right. Now you had mentioned earlier about proof. Why is this so hard to accept by so many people? Why is this still considered fringe science if you feel that there is proof out there?
There's plenty of proof. There's been proof of the afterlife in particular for like well over 100 years by prominent scientists, you know, very intelligent, prominent, well-regarded people. And as soon as anybody comes out for it, they get marginalized, like, you know, Dr. Weiss, who was the head of psychiatry at Mount Sinai, if I have my back straight on that. You know, he's not the head of psychiatry at Mount Sinai anymore. You know, he now is a new age person, see, because they're not going to keep him on. So there's a few people like Dr. Gary Schwartz at the University of Arizona, I think it is, who has retained his position as a scientist and a researcher, and he's researching mediums. And so far as I know, he's still working there, you know, but most people, you know, they can't stay in their position as soon as they come out of the closet with this stuff. So it's just a tremendous prejudice against it. I mean, you know, and is why is that? I think it's because there's been a creeping materialism over the last 100 years or so that's come with technological advances. We've begun to worship technological advance, and we've become more and more materialistic as we've done that, and we've lost sight of. Because when I went to school, got my master's in counseling, and I graduated in 81, there was still people that were involved in what was called a third wave of psychology, Rogerian psychology and Adlerian psychology and things like that. Now everything is chemistry. You know, it's all brains and chemistry. Nobody, as far as I know, nobody in mainstream psychology or psychiatry talks about anything except brain chemistry anymore. Even behavior, at that time, behaviorism was coming in, but now apparently it's even embarrassing to talk about behavior. You know, if you're not talking about brains, you're out of there. So it's been a creeping materialism for quite some time, and it gets worse and worse and worse. And because it's creeping, it's like you can put a frog in water and you can kill him by gradually turning up the heat, and he won't jump out because he doesn't realize, you know, how hot it's getting. You know, well, materialism has been like that. We haven't realized how bad it's gotten unless you go back into the 1800s and look at what scientists were doing in the 1800s. And back then, it was okay to investigate paranormal things. You didn't lose your reputation. You still had your reputation as a scientist if you were investigating the paranormal. Now there's a big split. If you're investigating the paranormal, you better not tell anybody, or you better be prepared to be kicked out of the scientific club.
Well, I recently retired as a police officer after a number of years, and yeah, there were some funny looks when they found out what I was doing on the side. No lie. I want to make sure we get this in here, Steve. Your website, contact information, that type of thing, are you on Facebook that people can go ahead and respond to you that way?
I am on Facebook personally, but it's mainly I work through the website, so just if we give the URL for that, it's the best.
Okay, and the URL would be?
www.ial.goldthread.com.
Okay, very, very good. excuse me. The researchers who are going into this field, are they coming from all different kinds of backgrounds, or are they predominantly psychologists or people with that type of training?
Well, there's a couple different kinds of research that I feel like I need to make a distinction between. There's what I call detective methods, and that covers a wide gamut. And then there's scientific, what I would call strictly scientific method. And the scientific method has primarily been pioneered by Dr. Ian Stevenson, who's passed on now. And his successor is Dr. Jim Tucker at the University of Virginia. And they have some colleagues. There's people in different parts of the country that are kind of working with them and following their method. But that's really the scientific research. There's also Dr. Peter Ramster in Australia who's a psychologist. Dr. Stevenson and Dr. Tucker are psychiatrists. So yes, as far as the strictly scientific research, it's in the realm of psychiatry and psychology. When you get into the detective methods, then it's a wide range of people, and those are people who, you know, look at a case and just kind of follow the clues like a detective would. There's one case that literally was investigated by a detective, and that would be Captain Robert Snow, who, last I knew anyway, was the head of the homicide investigation for the city of Indianapolis. And he had a past life regression on a dare. One of his co-workers dared him to try it, and he kept putting her off, and finally, just to shut her up, he went ahead and did it. And for the first half an hour, he didn't feel anything. He hurt in the chair, you know, his back hurt, but he didn't feel anything. And then suddenly he was plunged into, he's one of those people that could experience complete immersion experience. So suddenly he's plunged into this past life, and he's walking around in this environment, you know. And he went through three past lives, and the most recent one was as an American painter. And he, you know, saw quite, he took from the tape recording of the session 28 points that could be proved or disproved. And he set about to try to disprove it because he didn't believe it, and he wanted to settle his mind that it was imagination, so he wanted to see if he could disprove it. And finally he ended up proving 26 of the 28 points, and I believe later on he told me he proved the other two. So everything checked out, and this isn't a professional investigator. So we've got people like that that nobody seems to know anything about, and they claim that there's no proof, but we've got people like Captain Snow.
Okay, and where would we find the research on this if we wanted to investigate it?
Well, there was a show on Sci-Fi Channel called Proof Positive, and Proof Positive featured him, and you can find that on the internet now on YouTube. So if you get on YouTube and put in Robert Snow, or you put in Proof Positive, you should come up with that episode. But he also wrote a book called Looking for Carol Beckwith,
okay,
which was the past life personality. He was a painter, was a not real well known. He was a known American painter. So you can look for Robert Snow and Looking for Carol Beckwith, I believe is the title of that book. I've got it here. I'll make sure that's correct before we get off.
Okay. You know, we are running short on time. Steve, I really appreciate you being our guest this week. We'd love to have you again on the show if you don't mind coming back sometime.
Love to. Yeah.
One more time with your website. Where can we find you?
Okay, it's www.ial.goldthread.com.
Okay, and where can we find a copy of your documentary?
I can't sell it except overseas because Films Media Group sells it to colleges, but you can see it streaming from Vimeo.com. Just get on my website, and the link to Vimeo is right there, and you can watch the whole thing online.
Outstanding. It's been very interesting, very eye-opening for me. Again, I don't have the background in this, not like Michelle does here. But,
yes, thank you so much.
I'd be interested to give it a try sometime.
Okay, thank you very much.
Well, thanks for being with us. And again, I hope we talk with you real soon.
Okay, good.
We do have some announcements coming up. June 19th, the Florida Ghost Team does have an event coming up. It's going to be at the Fort Lauderdale Fire Station number 3. Our guest that evening is going to be Joseph Labruto III. He is our psychic medium, very talented gentleman. He is going to be on the air. I'm sorry, not on the air, but he's going to be at that event doing some readings, some public readings, and he, you know, if you're lucky, you might get a private reading out of that too. And in addition to that, we're going to be having a paranormal investigation at the fire station and see if we can contact our friendly neighborhood firefighter ghost that hangs out there, Mr. Robert Knight. For information on that, you can go to www.floridaghostteam.com. That same weekend, June 18th, 19th, and 20th, members of Florida Ghost Team, including myself, Darlene, Sean, our director and founder, we're going to be at SuperCon in Miami. It's an animation, science fiction, horror conference. You can get information on that at www.supercon.tv. As always, you can reach us through Facebook, Supernatural Crossroads. If you have any questions for us, you can reach us through our website, www.supernaturalcrossroads.com. And next week, our guest is going to be from Heroes, the television show Heroes, James Kyson Lee. And we're really looking forward to that one. And have a great night, and we'll see you next week.